Welcome to The Bookshelf. I'm Ben Reed, and tonight we are continuing The Desk on the Sea, written and read by Jonathan Johnson. In this episode, Jonathan and his family travel to Glen Elg, where something lost is waiting to be found.
Scotland, midsummer. I have never put much stock in the notion of genetic memory, but one look at Glen Elg and I began to wonder. Amy, Anya, and I drove a single-lane road up switchbacks, climbing through evergreen forests so steep our car pigeon's motor strained, even in low gear, until we came to the top of Radigan Pass. There, spread out below us, was the place for which I suddenly knew I'd always been searching. The mountains and the sea. Rocky peaks rimmed the glen's long parabolic slopes of open moorland and heather and more evergreen forests, all curving down to square and rectangle pastures and stands of deciduous trees spread along the silver-blue river, winding down to the blue coast. A place I'd never seen before. A place I recognized instantly. "Daddy," Anya asked, "do you think I could pick some flowers, in case we find the graves?" We pulled off by the Welcome to Glen Elg sign, where Anya selected one stem of blossoms from a patch of wild purple foxgloves. We drove on, over a cattle grate and down the narrow road that descended past farms and pastures and mossy, stacked stone fences. Soon we came to a little cemetery on the valley floor. If they had been born here, perhaps they were buried here. As we stepped through the gate, I suggested we spread out. We'd only just begun to search when Amy said, "Over here!" There, under the reach of an elm's branches, was a silvery-gray marble headstone with the names John McClure and Anne Campbell, chiseled in white lettering. My great-great-grandparents. Born, and indeed, buried here. Surrounding them were other McClure headstones, a whole group of them. Anya laid her single stem of purple flowers. Amy took photos. I stood there quietly, letting the reality of what we had found rise and fill the air around us. Every McClure headstone had a symbol, an interlocking M, C, and L. Each was also inscribed with the same Gaelic words, Gasam Bresan La. The big elms shaded the headstones, while sun shone across nearby pasture land and up the greenest slopes imaginable. All my life, I have sought places as one way of making sense of my life. And now I had this one, and this place had me. It had been waiting. We drove the rest of the way into the tiny village, past the village hall and little primary school, stopping a couple times for sheep in the road. We bought ice cream cones at the whitewashed Glen Elg store and sat on a bench outside eating them. Beside us hung baskets of flowers Amy said my mom would have liked. "Yes," I agreed, "she'd have liked everything here." It occurred to me that this place had been here all along and she died without knowing. I could never tell her about it. That injustice dimmed the brilliance of our new discovery a little. But would I have come here if she hadn't died? An earthy woman with long, curly gray hair passed us with, "Lovely day." "Summer's here," Amy replied. "Aye, long may it last." I asked if she happened to know of any living McClures in the area. "You'll want to talk to Houston," she said. "Houston and Christina, at Riverfoot." She pointed across a delta of pasture at a cottage backdropped by the sea. "Are they McClures?" Anya asked. "Aye, McClure's, and he knows the history of the glen well as anyone." The possibility that I might have some living connection to this place was almost too wondrous to consider. As soon as that possibility presented itself, though, came the fear that I might not. I wasn't ready to find out. I needed time to steady myself. We drove through the tiny heart of the village and found an older cemetery in the yard of a small white church, right on the shore. Here were more McClures, dates back into the 18th century dates obscured by wind and rain's erosion. And again, on the McClure headstones, the words, Gus Om Brisson La. Could it be we had a family motto? Could it be there was a we? Amy, Anya, and I had been close to this place before, 25 linear miles south at Loch Shiel. We'd driven right by the turnoff to Radigan Pass and the Glen on our way to visit a castle with Amy's parents last fall. Across a narrow sound of sea, from the older Glen Elg Cemetery, rose the mountains of the Isle of Skye. We'd been there, too. It was as though something in me had been homing, circling this place, seeking it all year. And before then, too, when we'd chosen Scotland for our year abroad. And my whole life, when I've been drawn, as I have since childhood, to hidden away mountainscapes, to remote coasts. I was still hesitant when at last we drove from the old cemetery out onto the delta of land where the river meets the sea, to Riverfoot, the cottage of Euston and Christina. It had begun to occur to me that my connection to anyone living here might be unclear or completely unknowable. If I wasn't ready for answers, neither was I ready for ambiguity, though ambiguity seemed a likely, perhaps the most likely, outcome. The name on the mailbox was McClure, but there was nobody home. I was disappointed, but was I also a little relieved? I left a note explaining who I was, the American great-great-grandson of John McClure and Anne Campbell McClure in the cemetery. I'd be in Scotland for 3 more weeks, I wrote, and left our Crail address and phone number. So perhaps we'd never know, at least not now. I could live with that. I had found this place, my ancestral home, and my mother's, and Anya's. We pulled back onto the road, heading down the shore toward a beach to gather some shells to send to my Aunt Charlene in thanks for the old family papers that had led us here. An elderly woman was pushing a small child in a stroller, a pram as the Scots say, down the road. I pulled alongside her and rolled down my window. "Pardon me, I'm a McClure on my mother's side, and I'm looking for any McClures in the village." I explained that we'd been directed to Euston and Christina, but there was nobody home at Riverfoot Cottage. "Ah, well then, their daughter Catherine lives on the farm you would have passed on your way down into the glen. Lamont's her married name." She looked at her wristwatch. "Ah, but she'll be at the school just now, picking up her children." "Children?" "Yes," Anya whispered from the back seat. "Aye, but she should be back home soon enough. You should stop there." I thanked and asked her, "Just one more thing. Do the McClures go back in Glen Elg a long time?" She looked at me over the top of her glasses. "Aye, 13th century." I felt something like a wind move through me. The breaths of 800 years of people, my mother's people, in this place she never knew, that I almost never knew. We walked the beach of my ancestors, and collected our shells. "I love it here," Anya said. "It's like the picture I drew for you of the house to look for, Daddy." Indeed, it was. We'd passed several cottages by the sea like Riverfoot, like the ones I'd found for us in Crail. But behind these cottages, mountains rose straight up, like in the picture of hers I'd brought with me when I'd come house hunting alone a year ago. The picture below which she'd written, "Goodbye, Daddy. I love you. Get a good house." "I'm glad we came to Crail, though," she said. "I love it there, and the cottage you found. I just mean, Glen Elg is, you know." "Yeah, I know." On our way back up the road toward Radigan Pass, we pulled off at the farm of Catherine Lamont. I got out and knocked on the door, but nobody answered here either. "Nobody's home?" Anya asked dejectedly. "I'm sorry." I was about to write another note explaining who I was when I spotted a girl about 10 climbing over a gate just down the road. I walked over and asked if she might happen to know a Catherine Lamont. "She's just in there," the girl said, and pointed to a barn from which an electric motor was buzzing. I called Amy and Anya from the car, and the three of us crossed the farmyard and passed a pair of Shetland ponies and some more kids playing with a couple of puppies. We looked through the barn door and saw a woman and 3 men shearing sheep. "Pardon me," I shouted over the rattle of the shears. They all looked up from their work. The shears stopped. Are you Catherine Lamont?
Yes.
I apologized for the interruption and introduced myself. I think we might be related. Catherine led us back outside. She was a few years younger than me. Her blonde hair was pulled back in a ponytail. The sun shone on her freckles, on her arms and face. It was my mother's skin. I introduced Amy and Anya. There was a kindness in Catherine's eyes as she studied me.
So, you're a McClure.
The graves in the cemetery, John McClure and Ann Campbell, I think they were my great-great-grandparents.
Really?
I don't know as much about the family history as my dad. He's the one you should talk to. How long are you in Glenelg? We have to leave soon, I said. We had a dinner invitation, a long drive from here. He and Mum are away to Inverness. It'd be good if you could talk to him. The girl I'd spotted climbing over the fence arrived with a package in her hands, clearly a pitchfork. Each tine was individually, as though for a joke, wrapped in shipping paper. It looked like a papier-mâché pitchfork. Everything here was marvelous.
Mum, it came.
Catherine introduced the girl as her daughter Megan. She called her other three children over from the puppies. The girl she introduced was Caitlin. She was about Anya's age. The little boys, she said, were Campbell and Callum. I introduced myself and Amy and Anya. The kids all shook hands politely. Megan commenced unwrapping her new pitchfork, but otherwise the children stood by, inspecting these strangers with American accents. Well, Catherine said with a smile, come in the house a while, won't you? Anya, would you like to stay and help this lot wash down the ponies?
Yes, please.
Can you guys show Anya what to do?
Those kind eyes, with the rising slopes of the glen behind and the clear sky above, were not the exact green of my mother's, but they were as close as any I'd ever seen.
Ah, she exclaimed as she gazed up at the sound of a car slowing in the road. There's Mum and Dad now. The car stopped alongside the gate. The window rolled down, and Megan, Caitlin, Campbell, and Callum ran over and greeted their grandparents.
Perfect timing, Catherine said. Come on, I'll introduce you.
Euston had an elderly man's good looks, with bright eyes that reminded me of Paul Newman's, a shock of thick white hair, and that familiar fair skin, weathered in his case from decades working outside. Christina beside him also had short white hair and bright, beautiful eyes, too. She nodded politely. As they sat in the idling car, Catherine leaned down and explained that we were in Glenelg researching our ancestors.
We've had a bit of a drive just now, Christina said apologetically. How long are you in Glenelg?
They've got to be away soon, Mom. Just pull up to the house for a minute. Catherine stood up and paid us a wink over the roof of the car. Euston drove the car to the driveway, and Catherine said,
So, Anya, you want to help with the ponies?
You kids take care of her. She's probably your relative. I grabbed my family history file from the car, and we followed Catherine inside. She apologized for the clutter in the kitchen and explained that they were just getting ready to build a new house. I didn't tell her how at home I felt in an old farm kitchen, with stacks of canned food and piles of work gloves on the counter. She poured us juices in Winnie the Pooh glasses, Tigger for Amy, Piglet for me, and we sat down at the table with her parents. I explained that we'd come to Glenelg looking for John McClure and Ann Campbell's graves and found them among all the other McClures in the cemetery.
He's up in the old cemetery, Euston said.
Of course he would be, I realized. He died in 1901. We must have missed him there. The headstone with both their names in the new cemetery must mark just Anne's grave.
We did go to the old cemetery, I said, and told him we'd found lots of McClures.
He said a man came through here one time doing research. The man had thought that way back McClures were Doers, that they came from Ireland through Perth. The name probably became McDoer, son of Doer.
And that became McClure, I asked.
Aye.
And they've been here since the 13th century?
He gave a half nod, half shrug.
Was he 70? Or maybe even 80?
Handsome, lean, and sinewy as he was, it was hard to say.
There was something written on the graves. Gaelic, I think.
Gasam Bresan La.
Euston said. Until the day breaks. He said something else in Gaelic to Christina. Till the day breaks, or until the day breaks, she said. I took a copy of The Family Tree out of the file and slid it across the table. I pointed out my mother's father, Ian McClure, and his father, Donald, born in Inverness, son of John McClure and Anne Campbell, both born in Glenelg. My grandparents, he said.
Your grandparents?
That's Don, my uncle. There was two Dons, went to Vancouver. My dad's brothers.
Both Don?
Aye. He and Christina exchanged a few more words in Gaelic. Big Don and Little Don, Christina said. They started a taxi company. The older one went to California, Euston said. His pronunciation of California made the place of my mother's birth and my birth seem far away and exotic. There was one that worked in Hollywood.
Hollywood? I puzzled a moment.
Oh, yes, he worked on glass.
Aye.
He made windows and glass eyes for monsters and things, for Warner Brothers. That was Don's son Ian, my grandfather.
Euston nodded and repeated,
in California.
Yes, so your grandfather is my great-great-grandfather?
Aye. We lost touch with them in California some years ago.
My mother's parents died young in 1962.
Ah, right, he said.
Just, ah, right. As if to say, that explains that then. As the half-century mystery of lost relatives was cleared up.
This is so interesting, Catherine said. Tell about your trip to Vancouver, Dad.
Euston said they'd been over some years back to visit the McClures there.
They sold the taxi service, but it's still called McClure's Taxis, Christina added.
We went through the relationships again until we had it solid in our minds. Euston's grandparents, John and Anne, were my great-great-grandparents. His father was brother to my great-grandfather. My grandfather and Euston were cousins, which made Catherine and me cousins, and Anya and Catherine's kids outside cousins.
Amazing, Catherine said.
We all sat back with the satisfaction of something accomplished, though unsure quite what. This was an experience entirely unlike any I'd ever had.
What did they make of us? Me with my beard, shaggy hair, and eager questions. Amy with her smile over at me, pleased by the obvious joy I was taking in this.
Catherine said we should organize a McClure reunion in the States and they'd all come over. And she offered for us to bunk down in the little wooden chalets they rent out to hillwalkers if we could come back and stay sometime.
I remembered passing those chalets beyond the dry stone fence beside the road on the way to Glenelg. Those chalets, a couple stables, the barn, and this farmhouse. Just another lovely pastoral cluster of buildings, for all I'd known.
I finished my juice from the piglet glass, and Christina said they really did have to be getting home, but they hoped to see us again. I told them about the note I'd left at their house, and that it had all our contact details. Catherine and I exchanged addresses. Outside, Amy took a picture of Euston and me standing beside his car, both of us with crooked, satisfied, only slightly uncomfortable smiles. I shook his hand, which was as lean and weathered as the rest of him, but his grip was gentle. I promised to return for a proper visit.
Aye, good, yes, he said.
Christina paid us a smile and wave as they backed out, and then they were gone. As Catherine, Amy, and I strolled back to the barnyard, Catherine said she was so glad I'd come and wondered at our perfect timing to be there just as her parents drove by. The other three men were done shearing for the day and leaned on the workbench, chatting softly. They stood up straight as we walked in. Catherine introduced the red-faced one as her husband, Donnie. He was a young, handsome guy, all muscle in his sweaty t-shirt, dirty jeans, and buzz-cut hair. His handshake was firm and friendly.
And his brother, Ron, and Skip, here working from Australia.
Catherine told them we were her long-lost relatives from America. They nodded approvingly. I told them I was sorry for pulling Catherine away from the work.
Don't be, she said.
She'll take any excuse, Donnie said, and they all chuckled. Catherine's kids and Anya wandered in while we talked.
Do you want to meet the ponies? Anya asked Amy and me.
We told the men thanks for sparing Catherine, and it was lovely to meet them. Anya took Caitlin's hand as the children led Amy, Catherine, and me out to the paddock.
I rode, Anya said.
I led, Megan reassured us. Just around here.
That's okay, Amy said. The pair of Shetland ponies stood no taller than Anya herself. Two of the fuzzy black and white border collie pups came bounding over. Anya and little Campbell picked up a squirming one each. Amy took pictures of the kids with the animals while Catherine and I stood there, shielding our eyes from the sun with our hands. A few blonde locks had come loose from where she tied her hair back to work. This is an amazing place, I said, glancing up at the hills rising around us. She looked around with me and put her hands on her hips. We like it here. What is it you do in the States? I told her I was a professor and a poet. A poet? Mostly, along with other writing here and there. Cousins, she said simply. You look like my mom, I offered. Your complexion, your freckles. Oh, she smiled and looked at the back of her arm. And your nose, and your eyes are green like hers. For a moment, I found myself unable to speak. Amy lined up the kids and Catherine and me for more photos. Then we said we should push on. Catherine and I agreed to exchange written versions of our family branch histories in the mail. I'll get all I can from Dad, she said. But we will see you again, I hope. I promised we'd return. And looking up into the hills a last time, I knew just how much I meant it. I would walk the trails up there, where someone in my place would have walked them had my great-grandfather Don stayed home. I would walk there and speak into the air, to what would have been. I would sleep and wake and sleep again in this glen. And I would get to know Catherine better, and her sister, whom she said lives just a few villages up the coast, and their brother, who's still in Glenelg. I would bring Anya, so she'd get to know better her Scottish cousins. I would see to it that what was restored, this legacy my mother unknowingly gave us, will go on. Catherine and her kids waved at the gate as we drove up the road out of Glenelg. As Pigeon revved into the steep ascent, I looked out over the valley headlands. The mountains curving around the top of the glen reminded me of places I love in Idaho and Montana, and the rugged, remote coast below made me think of Upper Michigan. Places where I've known exquisite belonging, and to which I've felt a draw so powerful at times it seemed the most important thing in my life to get back there. In a way, I guess it matters if there has always been some deep genetic or perhaps even spiritual memory drawing me to Glenelg. In the same way, I guess it matters if the sentient spirits of this place, and even of my mother, led me here and can lead me still through the rest of my days. In another way, though, it doesn't matter at all. Either way, those who came before give us what they are, their places and their loves, and then they go. And what they have given us stays. Even when their names are lost to us, are faded from stone, even when their ashes, like my mother's, are scattered to distant waters, who they were can lead us if we only follow ourselves. We would be back with the McClures of Glenelg someday, I promised myself. But before we left the Highlands, for who knew how many years, we had one more thing to do. We had a train to catch. The Hogwarts Express is how we and hundreds of millions of kids and their parents around the world have come to know it. But the antique steam train from Fort William to Malag is officially called the Jacobite. We boarded at the Fort William station, and from the moment Amy opened the old wood and glass door to what was an exact match to the train compartment in the films and said Hermione's words, "Come on, you two, everywhere else is full," we were inside Anya's dream. For 2 hours, as the train chugged its steam and smoke trailing way beside locks and through mountains and over the famous viaduct overlooking Loch Shiel, we played. Wordsworth says the world we perceive is one we also half create. That belief was a kind of gospel my mom passed on to me. Just as she never saw Glenelg or knew her relatives living there, my mom never read so much as a page of the Harry Potter books. Our family enthrallment with that world didn't begin until shortly after she had gone. But there was no doubt in my mind as I watched Anya look out the window over her Nana's near namesake loch, searching for Hogwarts Castle on one of those seemingly empty, far peninsulas, that one way or another, My mother had led us here, too.
"See it yet, Harry?" I asked.
"It's there, Ron."
You've been listening to The Bookshelf on Spokane Public Radio. Join us next time to continue Jonathan Johnson's memoir, The Desk on the Sea. Music for this episode is by Cerdwin and Greg Spatz. I'm Ben Reed.